The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3, your home since 1985 for NPR News in the morning during Morning Edition, and in the afternoon with All Things Considered. You can find out more about us at KUAF.com, and you can support your public radio station at supportkuaf.com. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later today on the show, small-town newspapers in Arkansas are fighting to stay alive for their readers. And we'll visit one small paper in the Arkansas Delta to find out how the owners there are hanging on. That's in the second half hour on today's Ozarks. First, a big company returns to its physical roots. Yesterday, Tyson Foods unveiled its new office building on Emma Avenue, a really new building.
We will say, you know, be careful because there's still some wet paint.
Tom Hayes, president and CEO of Tyson Foods, welcomed a few hundred people to the grand opening of Tyson Emma yesterday. He might have been kidding about the paint not drying, but the 56,000-square-foot facility is brand new. About 300 IT employees will make their home in the multi-story open floor plan structure. The move to Emma for Tyson is actually a return. Tyson Emma sits on 7 acres in downtown Springdale and includes the plot where the original Tyson Foods headquarters building was located decades ago. John Tyson, the chairman of the company's board of directors, says the return brings him all the way back.
I was first down here when I was 5 years old, and, you know, you would still have, you know, the rodeo go up and down the street. You still had the drugstore. So it was a center of life for those of us that grew up in Springdale. And Springdale only had 5,000 people when I was growing up. And I saw a population sign the other day that said we're over 70,000 people. So the circle that goes on, the fact that we're able to contribute to this street, because Springdale is the only town in northwest Arkansas that doesn't have a square. We're the only one that has a single street. All the other towns, Siloam, Fayetteville, Rogers, and Bentonville, all have squares. So we're a little bit different. So maybe that says something about some of our successes and things. But it is full circle.
The new building actually links the original Tyson site with another downtown landmark, a building formerly known as the Brown Hatchery. Scott Spradley, the chief technology officer for Tyson, says while the bones of Tyson Emma are historic, the central nervous system is absolutely new.
What you won't see in this building are any offices for any people to sit in. What you will see is collaboration rooms for all of us to sit in. It's my dream that we move to a more collaborative nature and that we really embrace what's going on in the world today, which is less hierarchical. And a phrase that I use a lot is, we have a lot of brains that are connected together. And so titles are out the window. It's all about human beings that are very smart working together to create implementable strategies and solutions. And so they made sure we did not have those offices. And so our new cultural normals start from this.
Tyson will now have about 400 total employees downtown, and city leaders are encouraged that more investment will follow. Yesterday, Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse recalled a 2014 $1 million commitment to the Downtown Springdale Alliance from Tyson, and he says this new office building means a daily presence of people wanting to eat, shop, and play.
If I was writing a script, I couldn't ask for a better gift for a revitalizing downtown. To bring employees down here, people down here every day.
Scott Spradley, Tyson CTO, says he's dreaming even bigger.
We look at this as Tyson Tech Town. We're going to start with about 250 employees in this building, but we have plans to see technologists walking up and down Emma Street and around this area in greater volumes as we go along. And we can see the birthplace of a whole new epicenter of technology coming in here. And as I talk with my friends at Walmart and J.B. Hunt and Rockfish and other technology companies, I really have a vision about getting them to look at this as a technical center as well. I met last week with the University of Arkansas deans of their colleges, and we've talked to them about the proliferation of technology we want to have in this area. Coming from the Silicon Valley, I have a lot of roots in the venture capital world, and so I think there are just as many fine technologists in this area and can be in this area. So we really want to drive entrepreneurialism in this area.
An environment of startups, brew pubs, and new restaurants to complement the businesses already open on Emma and in downtown Springdale may develop in the future. But as for the present, Scott Spradley says a sort of revolution is already underway inside the new Tyson Emma.
The normalized environment that most of the people that are going to move into here from are sitting in walls that are gray, that are about 7 feet tall, and there's something very interesting about the color gray. If you notice, it's the color that's often used in battleships and prisons. And that's by design. And that's what's called a creative constrictor. So the human being's brain doesn't go to its most creative reaches when it's enclosed like that by those colors. When you open it up, the brain expands. And now you have people who are saying, these are things that are possible. So that's what we're trying to achieve here.
The building opened yesterday on the site where the original headquarters building, once home to Springdale Produce Company, owned and operated by John W. Tyson, was constructed around 1920. John Tyson, the grandson of John W. Tyson and the son of Don Tyson, says his family has long understood the company's role within the city.
And when I think about returning to Emma Street, I think about the conversation Dad had with me back in 1978, 79 about leaving Emma Street and what it would mean, and the lifting of the set of activities off Emma Street and going out to the family property in Johnson. He was aware of that, and he was aware of the possible impact. But based on what was going on, he thought it was best that we lift and move the activities and created a central location for our people to work. I think today my grandfather and my father would be happy that we've reconnected. We never left. We always had activities. But I think with what we see here today, they would appreciate that we've come full circle.
This is Ozarks at Large.
30,000 Americans die each year from gunshot wounds. So should gun violence be treated as a public health issue?
That's the approach we should be taking to gun violence research. It should be no different than the approach that we take to cancer, heart disease, or diabetes.
I'm Elise Hugh. How gun violence compares to other public health issues, and what's the best way for the government to address it? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 3 to 6 today on 91.3. Later on today's show, the last weekend before Thanksgiving will bring plenty of music to local stages. Timothy Dennis has our weekly checklist for tunes. And in about 8 minutes, putting professional actors and young actors on stage together.
One of the things that really resonated when Cassie and I first met was this model of using both adult actors and juvenile actors in age-appropriate ways. Because I had, in my previous life, in one of the earlier theaters I worked in, we had a very similar arrangement in a children's theater setting. And it worked perfectly. And mm-hmm. a number of those kids, and not that you're doing this in order to create the next generation of actors. That's not it. It's more about life cultivation and life skills and cooperative learning. And theater is a team sport. Mm-hmm. So there's many reasons why you do this other than creating the next great generation.
Trike Theater and Walton Arts Center team up for a Charlotte's Web that's not quite like previous productions. That's ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
Support for 91.3 comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring healthcare and insurance, the area's largest hospitals, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. Additional support provided by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology Certified Imaging Departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Additional support comes from Farmer's Table Cafe, located in South Fayetteville at 1079 South School Avenue. Farmer's Table, serving locally sourced breakfast, lunch, and dinner Tuesday through Sunday, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 5 to 9 p.m. The Daily Farmer's Plate, menus, and more at thefarmerstablecafe.com.
The city of Fayetteville is formally seeking an urban tenant farmer for a plot of land just southeast of the recently restored Woolsey Tallgrass Wet Prairie. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us there.
A huge flock of snow geese fly overhead this drizzly, chill autumn morning, heading south for the winter. This place was once an ancient tallgrass wet prairie, former Osage territory, inhabited by eastern elk, prairie chickens, Carolina parakeets, gray wolves, and bison. In 1830, Kentucky farmer Samuel Gilbert Woolsey, his wife Matilda, and their 13 kids settled here, just across the road, just as Washington County was forming 6 years prior to Arkansas becoming a state. Through the 20th century, this land was divided up, plowed into cow pasture. In the early 2000s, the city of Fayetteville purchased a large section of Woolsey Prairie to construct a new Westside wastewater treatment facility, finished in 2008. The city set aside land as compensatory mitigation, naming it Woolsey Wet Prairie Sanctuary. Over the past decade, Benton ecologist Bruce Shackelford has completely restored the rare prairie wetland, reviving a host of native plants, attracting all sorts of wildlife, like the migratory snow geese overhead. And now, says Fayetteville sustainability planner Leif Olson, the city seeks a tenant farmer to occupy this leftover 5-acre prairie parcel.
We're calling it the Woolsey Working Farm.
Woolsey Working Farm is just across the road from the old Woolsey Homestead, now being carefully restored by the city as a future public historical site under guidance of the Woolsey Homestead Study Group, appointed by Lionel Jordan, the town mayor, in 2016. Olson is a member of the group. He's also overseeing the hiring of the tenant farmer for the Woolsey Working Farm.
Yeah, a tenant farmer is just basically the city would create a lease agreement with the person that's proposing to farm it. And what the city is looking for out of it is we want the tenant farmer to provide a public good, which is unspecified.
That's according to the formal request for proposals, or RFP, issued by the city in late October. Now, historically, a tenant farmer reimburses landholders with a portion of produce or cash. In this case, the Woolsey Working Farm tenant must give back to the community in some way. For example, donating fresh tomatoes to a food bank, providing eggs to a homeless shelter, hosting gardening classes to public school kids. Applicants do not have to be a city resident, nor have any agricultural credentials. The scope of the agricultural projects is open, says Les McGaw, City of Fayetteville purchasing agent in charge of competitive bids.
Has to be someone willing to do the work.
McGaw says applicants must submit a formal business plan, including site preparation, water usage, drainage, erosion control, mechanical equipment on site, vehicular access, proposed greenhouse, cold frame, or storage structures, and fencing.
Basically, it can be pretty simple, but it needs to be included. Basically, in the objective of the business or nonprofit farming, the endeavor. So whatever you want to accomplish.
The land is zoned residential agricultural, so row crops, orchards, field crops, livestock, free-range poultry, goats are all options. The leaseholder will be responsible for maintaining an aesthetically pleasing site, keeping things tidy and mowed, and applicants must furnish a list of all agricultural chemicals they propose to use. Tenant farmers cannot reside on the property, but they can conduct business, for example, a roadside vegetable stand. Tenant farmers must also be fully insured. Leif Olson welcomes all applicants of all kinds.
Tell us what you would like to do with the land and show it, or tell us how that would benefit the community, what you would give back as compensation for holding the lease at no cost.
Hopeful tenant farmers can detail all this in their application, submitting their proposals for hand delivery to City Hall in sealed, officially labeled envelopes by November 29th. A formal selection committee will decide the tenant farmer based on qualifications, experience, proposed method for doing work, and past performance. A short list of farmers will be chosen, then interviewed. City Council will decide the tenant farmer early next year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You can find a link to the Woolsey Working Farm RFP at ozarksatlarge.com. Later this week, Charlotte's Web, a classic tale of friendship and loss by E.B. White, adapted for the stage, will debut at Walton Arts Center, produced by Trike Theater. Recently, Cassie Mashevich, Artistic Director for Trike Theater, and Scott Galbraith, Vice President of Programming and Executive Producer at Walton Arts Center, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to discuss the production that will have more than two dozen performances. Cassie says, like the partnership between Spider Charlotte and Pig Wilbur in the play, the teaming up of Trike Theater and Walton Arts Center makes sense.
We've always had this dream of being able to produce main stage production is what Trike Theater is calling it, where adult actors, professional actors, are acting alongside young actors that have been trained up in the Trike programs or had done other things in Northwest Arkansas. And so when Laura Goodwin and I sat down a year ago and started planning the season, it was one of those, I'm like, this is it. Trike's going to be 10 years old. This is the time for us to be able to, we either do it now or we kind of don't do it. And so she's like, great, let's do it. And Scott came on board. Mm-hmm. He was all for it. And we created this symbiotic relationship where it's like, Trike is producing it. We've hired all these professional designers and a professional director, and we're so excited to be at home at the Walton Arts Center for 3 weeks.
That's quite a run.
Yeah.
It is quite a run. And the Walton Arts Center, I'm still new to the market. I've been here a little over a year, but my understanding is that the Walton Arts Center has had a history of working with local arts groups, SONA, Theater Squared, mm-hmm. CCC. Trike Theater is a logical extension of that and is the logical next great partner.
Professional actors, you have some young actors mm-hmm. involved as well?
We do. So there are five professional actors in the cast. One of them is actually a Bentonville native. Mason Azale is a Bentonville person, went to the University of Arkansas, lives in L.A. now, but has come back. Jason Shipman went to the University of Arkansas. Johnny Schrimmer is the theater teacher over at the New School, also has her MFA in acting. And then Katie Wee and David Anthony are both at Trike Theater as resident actors and teaching artists and artistic assistants. So we're excited about them as a company of adult actors. And then we put the casting notice out there, and we had over 50 young people audition for the roles of Fern and Avery and Lurvy. And so we have six young people that are all playing those roles, but we have two different casts. So we have three young people in each performance. Because there's 26 performances or 25 performances 25. Now. And so we knew that we didn't want one kid to have to do all of that because they're missing school as well, because we're doing a number of different school performances as well as the public shows.
One of the things that really resonated when Cassie and I first met was this model of using both adult actors and juvenile actors in age-appropriate ways, because I had in my previous life in one of the earlier theaters I worked in, we had a very similar arrangement in a children's theater setting. It worked perfectly, and mm-hmm. a number of those kids, and not that you're doing this in order to create the next generation of actors. That's not it. It's more about life cultivation and life skills and cooperative learning, and theater is a team sport. Mm-hmm. So there's many reasons why you do this other than creating the next great generation. But ironically, several of the kids that we worked with in Texas are now on Broadway mm-hmm. in major leading roles. So there's this generational contribution to the industry that comes with this kind of work. So what they're trying to do so resonated with my history and what the center's about that it just made great sense. So to be able to provide that professional setting and that length of run, because just mm-hmm. running a show that many times is a particular training tool that is often missing.
It has emotional heft.
Oh, it mm-hmm. does. It's so sweet. And we've been doing a lot of research about just kind of what age do we think Wilbur is. And he is, doesn't have a family at the beginning of the stage. Fern becomes his mother. And then Charlotte becomes his mother. And so there's a number of different journeys that are going on where Wilbur has to understand loss and also has to understand being an outsider in a new world. And a lot of times when kids are about nine, about third grade, that's when they start to realize the world is so much bigger than their home. And there's a sense of anxiety that can sometimes developmentally start to happen where they start to realize, well, if mom and dad aren't here, they might die or something might happen. And so Wilbur's also going through that, the world is bigger than just my little barn. And so he's very much going through, we see him go through a process and a stage development that I know 9-year-olds go through because my 10-year-old's going through it right now. And also Charlotte is, we talk a lot about in our rehearsal process about what is a hero? You know, what does a hero do? And Charlotte's a hero. Wilbur's a hero. Templeton ends up, you know, doing heroic things. Everybody, every character in the story is very heroic.
Well, and I think even if kids don't have that immediate experience in their own lives, we're an adoptive mm-hmm. family, and my kids are young adults, but they come through multiple families. So mm-hmm. even if a child isn't having the experience of multiple mothers, they probably have friends who are going through mm-hmm. that, or there's a familial relationship that starts to develop with a teacher mm-hmm. that's different from the parents at home. So even if they have a very traditional parental family environment, this journey mm-hmm. is informative. And if their family experiences anything other than that, I think there's also additional touch points. So it's just one of those stories that really reaches the wide swath of families.
Scott Galbraith is Vice President of Programming and Executive Producer at Walton Arts Center, and Cassie Mishevitz is the Artistic Director and Founder of Trike Theater. Charlotte's Web opens Friday, and public performances run through December 2nd. You can find out more at waltonartcenter.org.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today we're in the Furman Garner Performance Studio with Sally Baker Williams. She's Director of Programs for the Humane Society of the Ozarks.
Thank you for having us.
Now, we're talking about an actual event that'll be taking place Thursday coming up. But first, I just wanted to... 73 years.
Correct.
Humane Society yes. in this area.
Yes, the Humane Society of the Ozarks was started in Fayetteville in 1944 by a group of concerned citizens. And when you think about that, that was World War II era. And they were concerned about the welfare of animals and how stray animals were treated in their community. And they decided to do something about it, and they incorporated at that point in time.
I wonder what that was like.
I think about that a lot, too. You know, I think about them, the conversations that the people that were involved. There were about six couples that were okay. instrumental in getting it started initially. And so you know that they were talking around the kitchen table or in the living room and going, this is not acceptable, because that was when they took care of stray dogs by rounding them up, and they had two great big pens right there. And they just tossed them into the two pens. And if somebody wanted one of them, they came and took it out of there and took it home. And if the pens got too full, they shot them.
Mm. Mm. 73 years removed from that. And I can see why that group said something must be done here in this area.
Right.
It's a little different now. I mean, this area, I think, is kind of known as a pet-loving area. And along
Absolutely.
With that comes taking care of some of those that aren't our pets.
Absolutely. Some of them that aren't our pets, and helping our friends that may not have the means. They love their pets. They want to do right by their pets. But they've hit a blip.
Yeah.
Or they've retired and they no longer have the resources they do. So a lot of our programming is directed towards helping them keep those pets in the home so that they don't end up in our shelters, our municipal shelters, our county shelters, and places like that.
I'm sure y'all work on donations as well, right?
We do. We receive no governmental funding at all. We rely on donations from individuals. We do get some grant funding, mm-hmm. but it is non-governmental grant funding. It's from private foundations. It's the $200 page in our book, or it's the lady that sends us $15 every time somebody she knows loses a pet.
Wow.
To honor them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that may not sound like much, $15 or something, but it's all of those donations that add up and let us have the budget that we have that we can then go out and do the work that we do.
Sally Baker Williams with the Humane Society of the Ozarks. Thursday's fundraiser is the 8th edition of Tales of Love Preview Party in Fayetteville. For more, search the community calendar at KUAF.com.
They're called the Singing Men of Arkansas, but today I've got a Whispering Man of Arkansas.
Well, you know, yeah, about 3 weeks ago I had a voice that folks said was sort of radio ready. And now it's, my wife sort of likes it. She says it sounds a little more like Humphrey Bogart.
Steve Gray has been part of the Singing Men of Arkansas for quite a while. But you can tell he's not been singing for the past few days. laryngitis type symptoms aside, he accepted our invitation to come to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about the Singing Men of Arkansas's upcoming annual Christmas concert. Yes, it's that time of year, that will take place on December 3rd at the Pat Walker Theater at Springdale High School.
It's something we've been doing every year. It's called our Home for Christmas concert. And every year we mix it up with something else. So we're really excited. We've got the old traditional I'll Be Home for Christmas, White Christmas, things like that. But then we're going to do a doo-wop Christmas and a sleigh bells Christmas. It's altogether different. And a lot of our songs are written by our own folks and arranged by our own folks.
Written?
Yeah.
New Christmas music.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Meek and Majesty, I believe, is written by Doug Walt, directed by Bill Burrows. Bill Burrows used to be choir director here at Fayetteville High School for years. So we've got some tremendous talent. And then we've got singers that, you know, other than singing in a shower, you know, they can hold a note. I always tell them, you might not be on the baritone note, but if the note sounds good, you're doing fine. And we go through an audition. But the audition usually is just to find out where you fit in the four parts that we have. We've opened Bill Gaither nationally three times, and he's big. Mm-hmm. A lot of gospel music and things like that. Loves having us. You know, all men's group, it sort of takes you back to the academies, and there's nothing wrong with the mixed choirs that they have today. But when you've got an all men's singing group of 45, 50, and they get into some of those intertwining harmonies, there's nothing like it. It really isn't.
Have a CD as well.
Yeah, we've got four CDs. Four,
but yeah. I'm looking at the Christmas one. Yeah,
we've got the Christmas one. And this was done a few years back, Sing We Now Christmas, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Mary's Little Boy Child. We may be developing one again. We're also going to Ireland again in March. we went about 7 years ago, and so about 25 of us are going to get to go again, all out of their own pocket. There's no money coming in from any of the funds that we raise from our ticketing. This is a ticketed event, so you go to singingmenofarkansas.org, and I think you go through our site, and it takes you to the link to the Springdale Performing Arts Center.
But that ticketing money doesn't get you to Ireland.
No, not at all.
That just helps support the...
It supports us as far as our music that we have to purchase, transportation, for instance. If we do a prison tour each year, we have to pay for the bus, pay for the overnights, things. Well, actually, overnights we take care of on our own, too. So it's all voluntary. The only person that's paid is the organist or the piano player. Of course, Jonathan Story used to be our piano man, yeah. You know.
Then he evacuated to Texas.
Yeah, he is, but he's coming back to the Walden Arts Center for a performance with his wife, Kara, so that's going to be coming up too. So we just love, we love music. We love each other. It's a great group, ages 18 to pretty close to 80. We've got some folks that sometimes they have to stand or sit while we're rehearsing, but great. They can sing, they can play other instruments. And so this concert, we're going to have a ballet group, New Creation Ballet Company, and we'll have some orchestration as well, great saxophone player, trumpet, drums, and things like that. So it's always a fine time. It really is. The greatest part of this is when the concert's over and we go out to the lobby. And people are coming out, and you see the gleam in their eye and the thank you. And of course, we feed on a crowd. We really do. And the better the crowd we have, the better we sound.
I'm no marketing expert, but don't use that in your advertisements. The best part of the concert is when it's over.
That's true. Of course, if I have to sing, it will be. I'm going to be bowing out on a couple of these coming up this next week.
Steve Gray with the Singing Men of Arkansas at the Carver Center for Public Radio last week. The annual Christmas concert will be Sunday, December 3rd at 3 p.m. in the Pat Walker Theater at Springdale High School. You can find out more at singingmenofarkansas.org.
So far this year, car donations to KUAF have brought in more than $5,000 to this station. Hi, this is Lee Wood, KUAF's Membership Director. Your car donation to KUAF is a gift we can put directly toward our programming. donate your car by the end of the year to make a tax-deductible contribution and support the station you love. Call 855-500-RIDE, that's 855-500-7433, to get the process started.
This weekend, Governor Asa Hutchinson and senior economic advisors and officials returned from a trade mission to Japan and China. Before he had an opportunity to shake off the jet lag, Mike Preston, the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, sat down with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics, to discuss that trip and what may develop as a result.
You know, we went there, and really it's about relationships. It's building these relationships. It's building the trust with these two countries to make sure that they're confident in the investments that they've already made here, and then looking for future investments. If you look at Japan, it's our largest foreign direct investment from any country, and China's a new market for us. You know, we've been very successful the last couple years, 5 projects, $1.5 billion in investment, over about 1,600 jobs total. Our focus in going there again was to, you know, reemphasize these relationships that we have, and then also to shake the bushes and look for some new projects to come out.
Did you find some?
We're in the process of working on a few. You know, nothing to come back and report on. But you know, Rice Ever was one of the projects that we announced just before we went over there, and I give that company a lot of credit because they really wanted to sign an MOU with us while we were there at their corporate headquarters with all their corporate folks. But they knew how important it was to Jonesboro, Arkansas, to announce that project there. So they had representatives from the company come over the week before we went to China to announce that project. So it's 130 jobs, $25 million capital investment, manufacturing company that's going to have their first North American headquarters located in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And that was real competitive. I mean, they looked at 5 different states, 70 sites in total before they made that decision in Jonesboro.
Toyota and Mazda, two other Asian companies. We found out Arkansas was not in the running for that. Have you had time to do a debrief on that, or will it come later?
It'll come later. We've had some short conversations, so we've got a general idea of, you know, what happened and what they're looking for. But
care to share?
You know, it boils down to workforce. You know, we need to be able to stand up a ready workforce in the time that they needed to, and then available sites. We got to have a shovel-ready site in the state of Arkansas. This project was moving so quickly that, you know, I think there were some things that stood in Arkansas's way, and I think we can overcome them. We're going to learn a lot from this this project. We're going to learn a lot more as we sit down with Toyota.
Conventional wisdom is that there are two super sites. Are they not shovel ready at this point in time?
They've got a ways to go before they can get there.
Yeah. All right. The governor said something in his press conference from China on this. I want to read you a little bit about what he said here. He said that whenever we got what I thought was in the window of early Chinese investments in the U.S. and recruiting those 5 companies that you alluded to Arkansas, I actually thought the investment opportunities would diminish and would not be available in the coming years. This trip has persuaded otherwise. You and I have talked about the fact that China has said it's going to pull back on its foreign investment. Why is the governor convinced that from this trip,
he's convinced.
Changed.
Well, you know, and obviously having the president follow us up on our trip there and reaffirming some ties with China made a big difference. But we heard from a lot of folks in China, especially from the government, from the ambassador, about what that just means. We knew that there was going to be some tightening of funds coming out of China, but it's on, as I refer to them, as vanity projects, on things. You know, in the entertainment industry and gaming industry, projects like those, they're tightening. Traditional projects like we've worked in manufacturing, investments into infrastructure, things like that, that pipeline is going to continue to flow. And that's what we were able to learn on this trip, that those projects are still going to come. So that's why it was good for us to be there. There's a couple of projects that I alluded to that we're still working on, a few leads that we're chasing down over there. So we're looking at that as a positive sign.
Mike Preston is the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. He discussed his recent trip, taken along with Governor Asa Hutchinson and other state economic officials, to China and Japan. That discussion took place with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. Arkansas Manufacturing Solutions, providing executive-level leadership and management consultative services to Arkansas companies in the areas of innovation, exporting, operational excellence, and sustainability. More information at mfgsolutions.org. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
This is a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large, so time for me to make the next door trek to the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio where Timothy Dennis resides. How are you, Timothy?
I'm fantastic. Feeling good on a Wednesday.
Well, good. Feeling good on a Wednesday because you're going to tell us about music for the weekend.
And there's a lot happening, as there usually is. Starting tomorrow night, Aaron Smith and the Coal Biters will be at Stage 18 in Fayetteville. You interviewed them a few years ago.
Yes, and then I end up seeing members of the band from time to time at other shows, and they're just great people.
I just say they're lighthearted folk music, and it just kind of reflects the kind of people they seem to be.
Yeah. I'll go with that.
Donnie's sleeping by her side every night for 33 years. Donnie bought himself a bike, set him back a couple grand. Takes a while to make that.
It makes me feel like I'm stepping into a Wes Anderson movie whenever I listen to their music. It's just so fun and lighthearted.
That's better than that. They deserve a better description than that, but go ahead.
Fair enough, fair enough. Doors are open at 6 p.m. Music lasts until 10. Tickets are $10 at the door if you're 21 or over, $15 if you're younger than that. Tom Anderson will be at the Artist Retreat Center in Bella Vista tomorrow night. He's played with several local folk and jam grass bands, including Cutty Rye, Isaiah's All-Stars, and of course, now Arkansas.
If I had a dime for every beer I drank, I'd tell you what I'd use it for. I'd pay me a road out of diamonds and gold right to the liquor store. And if every girl that I'd ever loved lined up like a telephone wire, they'd all be singing the same old song, my own tabernacle choir. Because I've lived a life of excess, and I got a ways to go. I can't wait to see what's next. Me and mine killing time ain't a wasting breath. I get to thinking we've all lived a life.
He's going to be solo?
He's going to be solo. He normally plays bass or slide guitar, but he's just doing this on guitar.
Cool.
Just him and a guitar.
Cool.
Doors are at 6:30, music's at 7, tickets are $10 cash at the door. Friday night, there's another show happening at Stage 18 that people should be aware of. Abram Shook is in town in support of his latest release. It's titled Love at Low Speed. He describes his band as experimental yacht rock.
Okay, and yacht rock is a term that's often associated with, Christopher Cross and some of the 80s, 90s.
Right.
People used to call it dad rock.
And the music, it does have kind of that glam feel to it. Not like glam rock, but I mean that kind of glamorous.
Smooth, glossy, yes. Well-produced. Yes.
Yeah, but it's also got a funk flair kind of injected into it. It's really good stuff. He's joined on that bill Friday night by Austinite Ralph White and local favorites Lost John.
All right.
Doors are at 6. Music is from 7 to 9.
That's Stage 18.
Stage 18. There's more funk happening in Fayetteville Friday night. Groovement will be at George's Majestic Lounge. They're a proper six-piece funk band with the big bass sound at the bottom and the horn on top.
First I was with you, then everything just got mixed up and lost along the way.
Doors are at 7, music is at 9, tickets are $10. Saturday, the Nielsens will be at Gallery 225 in Bentonville. That's Ashton Nielsen Barbary and Cody Nielsen of Farmer in the Markets.
Ah!
Music's from 7 to 9 p.m.
Where is that again?
That is at Gallery 225 in Bentonville.
Oh. Ooh, that's an intimate space.
Yeah. Caleb Brighton Martin is going to be at Core Public House on Mission Boulevard in Fayetteville.
He'll be on the show Friday.
Perfect way to preview that show.
Yeah.
It's folk music, typically him and a guitar. Music's from 7 to 9 p.m., and that's a free show.
All right.
Yeah.
You can't beat that.
No. And finally, we get to Sunday. If you're in MENA, this show is for you. Still on the Hill will present Still a River at Ouachita or Little Theater.
Oh, you know what? I was about to say with the last show, you can't beat free, but actually, Still on the Hill will beat free.
Yeah, they top it off by the first 100 people getting there. They ask one per family, please.
Right.
But the first 100 people will get a free CD of Still a River.
You actually make a profit by going to this show. You
right.
come out with a $15 right. CD.
If you're close to MENA, that is.
Well, yeah, good point. Yeah. Good point. You'll still be profiting.
Well, yes, because it's good music.
Yeah.
Your soul will profit.
There
we'll put
you
it that
go.
Way. It's sponsored by the National Park Service, and the songs and album are a tribute to the Buffalo National River, which is still a river.
Yeah.
Music is from 2:30 to 4 p.m.
And where is it, MENA?
It's at the Ouachita Little Theater.
All right. You and I will be back next week, which will be the day before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you, Kyle.
Support for 91.3 comes from Malco Theaters, featuring the Metropolitan Opera's live HD production of The Exterminating Angel this Saturday, November 18th, beginning at 11:55 a.m. at the Razorback Cinema in Fayetteville. Malco.com for tickets.
Newspapers in small rural towns have served their communities for decades. But as some of those communities lose population and businesses that buy ads, the local newspaper can be in peril. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek with Arkansas Public Media recently visited Arkansas's Mississippi Delta farmland to see how those local newspapers are hanging on.
In a small town called Brinkley, Sandra Kemmer is volunteering in a local cafe to promote the area's economy by giving out rice products.
Hi, y'all. You can have some cookies when you come back. It's rice month.
Agriculture is the center of life here. But for decades, rural Arkansas towns like Brinkley have been dwindling, and with them, a linchpin of daily life, the town newspaper. Kemmer says with spotty internet in the Delta, she uses the paper like a calendar or a daily planner. So she worried when the Brinkley newspaper's building burned down.
It was just really, just almost devastating. You know, we couldn't believe it. What are we going to do? No paper. What will we do? You know, how will we keep up?
But then a 19-year-old college student named Hayden Taylor bought the paper for $5,000. Brinkley rallied around him, and subscriptions, which cost $35 a year, nearly doubled to $1,700. Editor, publisher, and owner Taylor is now 20. Next year, he hopes to expand the paper online.
I don't know what motivated everyone to say so loudly that we want the paper, we want to keep the paper in Brinkley, we don't want to lose it. They're just holding on to tradition. Probably something along those lines.
Taylor says with low overhead, he and his staff of 4 plus volunteers are making ends meet. He says he takes home about $250 a week, an income he supplements with his savings. He says he lives rent-free in a building his family owns. Tom Larimer is head of the Arkansas Press Association, which helps bring in ads for its member papers. He says for a small town, a newspaper is like a school. It's part of the local identity.
You know, when you lose your school, it's very traumatic for a community because you have generations of people that have gone to that school and now it no longer exists. And that's a part of that community that'll never come back.
In over a decade, the state has lost about 12 of 130 newspapers. Three closed this year, including the White River Journal. It's located in another Delta town, Des Arc. 95-year-old Dean Walls stopped publication of the 110-year-old family paper this summer.
Most people said it's a sad day. That's what we heard from a lot of people. It's a sad day when the journal quit coming.
Dean Walls ran the journal for 72 years. At one point, she and her late husband worked in a building with no air conditioning, using an old-fashioned hot lead press.
Mother still has scars on her arms where the hot lead would bounce out of the pot onto her arms.
That's Walls' 78-year-old son, Charles, a retired architect who helps out with the paper. They printed their last edition this August. Des Arc's outmigration is typical for the Delta. It's lost businesses, and that means few local ads for the paper.
We just can't do what needs to be done. And I don't want to do a sorry job. We've had a good newspaper with a good reputation.
But while the newspaper closed, she and Charles are now working on a free email version with some news and information. They say they won't fully retire because people in Des Arc just can't imagine life without local news. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, Arkansas Public Media.
Arkansas Public Media is a journalism collaboration involving Arkansas's public radio stations and is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can find out more at arkansaspublicmedia.org or at the Arkansas Public Media Facebook page.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support provided by The New School, an independent school educating one-year-olds to high school. The school's faculty and student-centered learning environment focus on developing the whole child and preparing them for college and life. Details, including preview days and Whitaker scholarship information, available at 521-7037 or thenewschool.org. Additional local support provided by David Adams, designer and creator of fine jewelry, located on the square in downtown Fayetteville. David supports local shopping for holiday gifts this season and wishes everyone happy holidays and a joyful new year. More information at davidadams.com.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, according to our calculations, Bentonville, Arkansas is roughly 7,800 miles from Auckland, New Zealand's airport. But this fall, some teachers from Bentonville traveled to New Zealand to discover how teachers there work.
So before we ever went on the trip, we started Skyping and networking with a couple of representatives from Core Education to really get a sense of the country and the way the schools worked in New Zealand, because it is somewhat different. And those are the folks that really hosted us and helped us be able to hit the ground running. So that Monday afternoon of that national holiday, we were together for a few hours, really getting ready for our week, although we had gotten lots of information ahead of time. So Tuesday through Friday morning, we were up early. We were on buses to visit schools.
An international approach to improving education. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. Also tomorrow on the show, the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report as businesses get ready for one of the most important, or if not the most important, economic season of the year, Christmas spending, and much more. You can also listen to Ozarks at Large at our website, ozarksatlarge.com, or at KUAF.com. There are past shows and individual stories. We're also available as a free podcast through services like iTunes and Stitcher, and you can find us on the, again, free KUAF app. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Muskogee, Oklahoma. And we'll end today's edition of Ozarks at Large with music from our great friends, Brick Fields. You can, according to the website, brickfieldsmusic.com, find the duo every Wednesday night at Bear's Place on 15th Street in Fayetteville, and then acoustically every Thursday at Hoppin' John's, which is on North Lee Avenue in Fayetteville. But beyond that, Brickfield's duo will be at Combs Cafe in Combs Friday night beginning at 6. Saturday night at Blues, Brews, and Cajun Food at Landry's in Fort Smith. Well, they're at Landry's, and it's part of the event, Blues, Brews, and Cajun Food. And then Sunday afternoon at 3, they'll be playing the Meals on Wheels benefit at George's Majestic Lounge. Brickfield staying busy. You can find out their full schedule, hear some of their music at brickfieldsmusic.com. This is a performance from inside the Carver Center of Public Radio, and it is Heartbreak. Ozarks at Large, a production of 91.3 KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Back tomorrow at noon.
I ain't cried enough these days. Not quite enough to lose my mind. But I know I can get there. Sure enough, yeah. If you'd be so obliged to heartbreak my heart, baby. One more time. I've seen you there, sure love. Your head a hanging down in grief, feeling all so guilty for the pain you think you've caused me. Oh, but I know I'll forgive you, and everything's gonna be alright. Well, there are times I need forgiving too, and you're always by my side. Heartbreak my heart, oh baby, just one more time. I ain't cried enough these last few days. Not quite enough to lose my mind, but I know I can get there. Sure enough, sure can. If you'll be so obliged to heartbreak my heart, baby, oh, just one more time.
Heartbreak.